see on first stabilization. We have a form here. For anyone who would like to testify on any of the three bills we have up for public hearing, please sign up so we can get your names. We are going to hold a public hearing on all three bills at the same time. We've done adopting rule. With that,
move adoption of the rule.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Move adoption of the rules as they're presented to us in writing. Any questions? Any objections? Seeing none, we have rule. Okay. We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bills 1028, 1029, and 1030. The public hearing. I don't have the sign-up sheet here. Is there anyone signed up? Or if there isn't, is there anyone who would like to come testify on any of these three bills? Come on up. Go ahead, whenever you're ready. Joe.
Good morning, Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhardt with Associated Oregon Industries. I'll make it short and sweet. We certainly support these three bills. I think the citizens of Oregon, as well as the business and every faction of Oregon, is looking for some type of PERS reform. I think the cost to state governments, as well as the burdens being placed on local governments, is way too high. And we think this is an opportunity to get this thing started, to get some changes made, and we certainly welcome it. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Yep. Any questions? Thanks a lot, Joe. Brian, a Pat? Go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Left. I'm president of the Oregon State Firefighters Council and also here today representing the PERS Coalition. Obviously, we're in opposition to this bill, 1028 in particular, although I believe that the contact rights would be violated for all three bills. I understand that the state has some difficult decisions that need to be made, but to across the board cut the retirement for all public employees is not the answer. Again, it violates their contract rights, but more important, there's been a violation of fairness. These people were hired, told they would receive pension benefits based on the system that's in place, and they deserve those benefits for the duration of their employment. We could go on the pros and cons, and mostly cons, but just suffice it to say that we think bad policy for the state to put their employees in a position where they would be most likely looking for other employment.
Questions? Brian?
For the record, I'm Brian DeLeichman. I represent the Oregon Nurses Association, the Oregon Council of Police Association, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers, and also the PERS Coalition. Very seldom do I come in front of a hearing in which I am almost speechless. But 1028 brings me to that point. You have police, firefighters, corrections officers, parole and probation officers, nurses in this state that have either worked a number of years and are vested or have worked less than the vesting, which this impacts, that would be dramatically impacted by this legislation. There's currently a process, there's actually two processes in place to look at alterations to the PERS system, both the current Tier 1 and Tier 2, that could be altered, that could put the system, at least in somebody's eyes, back on track. I'm not sure that it's totally off track, but you're well aware that the governor has a task force, all the parties are at that that table. There's discussions with all the stakeholders. I assume they'll have a product when they're done. The speaker has a task force, again, all the employers and employees, a whole variety of different interests, including non-employer and non-employee, are at the table there discussing what the options are. The employees have made some suggestions for alterations in the current system that we'll see where they go. But to basically abolish the PERS system by a date certain guarantees you a couple of things. One is absolute inability to recruit police, fire, corrections, and nurses by any public employer in the state. I think it also guarantees you a mass exodus by anybody that can retire prior to that date. They are getting sick and tired of these attacks. They believe it's directed. They take it personally. They're doing their job. And the feedback I'm getting is enough of this. When I can retire, I'm out of here. When I'm eligible, I'm out of here. Because this is directed at me personally, and that's the way they feel. So for being speechless, I guess I've got gone a little bit, but I'm absolutely dumbfounded by 1028.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Decker.
Thank you. Brian, I have a question, and Mr. Voyko, you might address this in your comments. The question, Brian, is, and we just got 1028 last night, so I was kind of going through it, but in Section 2, it sets up an end date, and I'm unclear about the construct of the new retirement system we would have, and I don't know if you've had the time or ability to take a look at it and get a clear indication of what the construct of the new PERS system or the new retirement system for public employees would be following July 1st, 2003.
Mr. Chair, Senator Decker, I see no establishment of a new system in this bill. This is the abolition of the existing system. There is no establishment of a new system in this bill, unless I'm missing it someplace.
Thank you.
Did you want Mr. Voyko to come forward?
Oh, yeah, I would absolutely like Mr. Voyko. I figured that you were signed up to testify, but I would certainly,
yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have one more person signed up to testify. Let's get that first, is that okay? And then,
sure.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Mark Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Association of Oregon Faculties and the Oregon Judges Association. And I think the prior witnesses have expressed our views as it relates to the general PERS system, but I'd like to talk about the bill relating to the judiciary. It might not be well known that the judges in this state have a totally separate and different retirement system than other PERS members. As such, they have both a defined contribution and a defined benefit. They have a cap on the retirement that they can receive, which is at 75%. It's a statutory cap that cannot be exceeded. They have no money match as compared to the other PERS employees that have been subject to some of the discussion and some of the concern. And I should reiterate that on the faculty side we don't share some of that concern. But as it relates to the judges, it is a totally separate system. And I know, Mr. Chair, that you and others have some concern about the judiciary who participate in a retirement system making rulings, perhaps being in a position of making rulings on the retirement system. They have made rulings on the regular retirement system. There has never been a case that the courts have been asked to make a ruling on their separate and distinct retirement system, which is part of the PERS. So, and I recognize that concern, but it's not a concern here that applies to their making decisions based upon their own retirement system. Again, I would emphasize that it is a totally separate and different system. There is a statutory cap, that there is a defined contribution and a defined benefit. So they cannot by investments or by any other means change their retirement. Their retirement is set to fix based upon the formula. You may believe that perhaps that that retirement at 75%, which is again a cap, a maximum, might be too high. We would submit we don't believe it is, but it is not, again, similar to the other PDRS system. Happy to answer your question.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Voigtel, a question or two for you, it sounds like.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to answer questions if I can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim, you've had a chance to look over the three bills.
I did.
The first question I have is the question I put to Mr. Glassnett, which is, what are the constructs? I couldn't find them in any of the three bills, but certainly 1028, which affects the largest number of citizens of Oregon. What are the constructs of the new retirement system that are contained in that bill?
Chair Beyer, Senator Deckard, I did not see any formulation of a specific successor system in this particular bill. Such discussions are going on with the various task forces, but I don't see them in this particular bill.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could just kind of tap your legal or inside PERS knowledge, how would that affect, say we pass this today, how would that affect your ability to operate a retirement system for public employees if 1028 with an emergency clause went into effect Friday of this week?
That's a difficult question. I'll do my best to answer it, Chair Beyer, Senator Deckard. If there were a, this is like a two-step dance, I suppose, in which the first step is specified, but the second step is not. The specification of the first step, I think, is understandable, and with some study, we could probably put together a set of circumstances or a set of processes and procedures that would, in essence, implement the cessation of accrual and active membership as of the date certain in this bill or however the legislature should decide. With respect to what comes afterwards, it depends on what direction we would get from the legislature as to what would be post the implementation date. As to what I agree with Mr. DeLashmid in the sense that this is a compensation policy and personnel management decision in the short run. It's also a pension policy decision in the sense that it seems to express that the current system is unsatisfactory for the provision of pension benefits, but it doesn't exactly say what system is the desired system for the state of Oregon. It's also a decision-making incentive kind of bill in that it sets a date certain and it's a spur to activity, but doesn't specify what the end of that decision-making is. I think least important is it's a fiscal decision, but because the UAL that's associated with the current system is predominantly for services already rendered, that cost is fixed and would largely be unaffected by the passage of this bill.
A couple more questions, Mr. Chair. So that leads me, just hypothetically, I guess a two-part. One is, if I'm say I'm a 59-year-old, I'm a retiring teacher, and this bill went into effect with no statutory direction for a new retirement system, but a clear drop-dead date of July 1st of next year, how would I be affected as I guess, approach my retirement?
With respect to the retirement decision or with respect to understanding what the compensation packages the employer is offering or both?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, with respect to the compensation package decision, and you have to understand this is not our area of expertise, but it's clear that the compensation package consists of salary, pension, health care coverage, and other things. If there is an unspecified part of the compensation package after the effective date, then that's obviously an area of uncertainty for the employer and the employee, your 59-year-old teacher. And I think that's what your previous witness, Mr. Delash, but at least part of it was what he was referring to. With respect to the retirement decision by your hypothetical 59-year-old, we don't anticipate, at least our first review of the bill, is that whatever would be a judged accrued benefit that is already earned, pension benefits already earned under the current system, up to the date at which active membership was no longer possible in the current system, that would still be owed by the trust fund to the 59-year-old. But additional accruals of pension benefit would be dependent on what the successor system looked like and when it started and all the details that tend to matter. I hope I'm being responsive. I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah, you are. One last question, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
The other, at least in regards to Senate Bill 1028, is the Tier 1 question, which is the largest. How does this bill address the whole question of Tier 1 and at least the anticipated shortfall that we face with Tier 1 retirees?
Chair Beyer, Senator Deckert, it does to some extent, presuming that it succeeds any possible or prevails in any possible judicial challenge, in that it stops the accrual of new Tier 1 benefits going forward. If one can no longer, as I best read the bill after one reading, if one can no longer accrue pension obligations after this date certain, it would prevent Tier 1 members or Tier 2 members, for that matter, from accruing pension benefits as specified in the current system beyond that point. To the extent that they've already been accrued, for example, under the money match system, an account balance has been built and that the employer is obligated to match, then I would, my first blush response would be those would still remain in place. So the financial consequences of Tier 1 and its issue or and its structure to date would still be an obligation owed by the system to the individual member.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Just to be clear, what I heard you say, I want to make sure I'm going to say it more in layman terms, but any benefit that a person has earned, if this was to pass, up to July 1st of next year, they would still have be owed to them. You cannot take that away.
Chair Beyer, that certainly is my assumption. That's my working assumption going in. That's not to say that our system is so complex that there might not be disagreements about exactly what benefits have been earned. We have so many moving parts in our system that there's plenty of room for disagreement about what has been earned and owed, and there always have been, at least since I've been involved in it. But the concept that you just laid forward in layman's language is what I would assume as well.
Okay, that's this one. I mean, I want to make sure that we both read the bill the same way. That's what the design of the bill is, so I want to make sure that that's the way. Obviously, there are still court cases out there that change what benefits are earned and what are not, so you can't predict those. Any other questions this time? Thank you very much. And
thank you.
Andy, we might need to have some more before we're done. Paul Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I'm representing AFSCME, Council 75. We've had an opportunity to review these bills and have grave concern, as do the other members of the PERS coalition. I'm a fill-in batter today for Mary Botkin, but I'd like to go on record asking a few questions for you to contemplate as you move this bill forward, Mr. Chair. I was hopeful to hear a presentation as to the perceived savings that would be accrued from this. If you read the cutoff dates of next July, what would happen? What's the fiscal impact, the current members, and the process? The one proponent testimony that you heard from AOI said the cost to local governments is a need for moving forward. And yet, we've heard no analysis in this bill. There's no fiscal impact. There's no other analysis whatsoever that says there's any savings or what those savings would be and whether this is the right way to go. If you take that one step further, then there should be an analysis of the cost to individual employees, like Mr. Chair Senator Deckard raised, about those employees at a certain age in their careers and bubbles and what would happen to them given a certain mix. The third issue that's most important is a recruitment issue, Mr. Chair. We need high quality public servants working for state and local governments, which certainly are in the system today. One of the major factors of the system is the recruitment issue and how does that play. But there's a fourth and more substantive issue that you might want to look through when you read all these bills and the mechanics of how they come together. We preach cooperation in this process and say we should all work together. And so far, there's at least three different task forces with everybody working together to come up with a reasoned, thoughtful process to come forward with. And where did those processes intermix with this series of bills? Especially when you take the fifth step and analyze the contractor that are out there. I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, because there has been no testimony to this effect, whether these bills have been looked at as to how they will affect individual bargaining units or different levels of government, but you certainly should look at that when you go forward. The sixth issue that's an interesting one, TERS just came up with a decision on mortality tables that they made here, and that's under litigation right now. How does this action affect that litigation, and should you, in fact, consider those and get some testimony on the record as to why those were there? The seventh point that raises, and particularly in 1028, is one that the TERS individual testified to. I question whether it is reasonable, without a successor system, to go forth and end a process right now, because what happens next, given contracts and savings and all these other issues, I think that's one that a plausible course of action should be plotted out before you say, here's the cutoff date. Finally, Mr. Chair, those are just eight issues that come to mind when I read the mechanics of these bills, just purely from a how would they work in the process. And I think that there's a high likelihood of litigation, no matter what anybody does in the PERS system, from all sides of the political spectrum. If that's the case, then it makes sense from a deliberative body that you might want to call your PERS guy up or whomever your actuarial types are and go through this bill section by section and build a record as to what you're trying to accomplish and what will be accomplished. Those are just a few concerns that I have, and having had the opportunity now for less than about 55 minutes to read these bills, but the mechanics of them raise some questions, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today, Mr. Chair and Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. One thing we can be assured of, if any of these bills pass, there will be court challenges. Any questions? We also like to testify on any of these bills, Senate Bills 10.8, 10.9, or 10.30. No one else wants to testify? Okay. With that, committee will be in recess and meet at call of sheriff.